This is Phil Ferrand, and I am walking around. I didn't intend to be walking around today. I intended to be driving home, but I forgot. So I've been working on, well, I'll get to that in a minute. Work is fine. Everything's gone good this past week. We've gotten a lot of things done. It was a little shorter time frame because the company was off for the 4th and the 5th. So last week was just a 3-day week. And when we were taking care of a lot of the little things that we'd put off last week because it was a short week and et cetera, et cetera. So anyways, writing is going fine. I am in the second writing sprint now, and that seems to be going fine. And I think I know where I'm going with this book. And so yay, all is well there. I'm just about, I think I just crossed 97,000 words, maybe 98,000 words, somewhere in there. And I only go to about 150 on these books. So I think I'm set up for this one. It'll be fine. And then of course, also, I'm working on costume, Marvin the Martian, of course, cause I've been working on that for weeks and weeks. I just pretty much blew the entire week trying to get the helmet done, because I need the helmet to sit outside the sphere that's his head. And I built a framework for that to hold it away from the head out of aluminum. That went fine. I thought, oh yeah, this is fine. And then I went to start cutting the stuff to build the helmet out of yoga mats, because I needed so much material, and I miscalculated somewhere along the line, and it took me a while to figure out what I was doing wrong. But I finally figured out, I think, that I'm trying to cut a helmet for a sphere, but the helmet is designed for a human head, which is kind of more oblong. And so the helmet is designed for an object that has a girth that is smaller than the measurement from one side of the neck to the other side of the neck, which means that if you scale it for one side of the neck to the other side of the neck, then it's way too big for the girth. And if you scale it for the girth for a sphere, it ends up being too short. So, oh man. So I started out at 350% of the pattern. And then I went to 325, and then I went to 250, and I have settled back at 275, patterning on the girth, and then we're gonna adjust the length. But it was just one of those things that it was just days, you know, trying to figure out what is going on here. Which what I should have done is I should have measured the helmet girth and compared that to one side of the neck to the other side of the neck. It was a bug that was trying to crawl into my mouth there. And then adjusted stuff accordingly. Now that I think of it, because I could have scaled it at different percentages. That's what I should have done. So there you go. Oh man, sometimes you don't figure out things until it's too late. Anyways, but I'll make this work. So I had fleeting thoughts of just going ahead and taking an extra day. I have extra days in July because of the way the days fall. So I had fleeting thoughts of taking an extra day, which I did do today. And then I realized that I had a breakfast scheduled for this morning. So I went into town to do the breakfast, and I thought, well, that's fine, because then I'll just record the podcast on the way back. And then I thought, oh, and I can take care of this errand, and I can take care of that errand, and I can take care of this errand. And I put reminders on my calendars for all those things, but I didn't put a reminder on my calendar to do the podcast. So then I got home and opened my trunk, and I went, ah. Oh. So anyways, that's fine. I didn't get out for a run this morning because I had a breakfast at 7, and so it worked out just fine because I'm outside now walking around in the sun, which we all need that vitamin D, and the sun is a little higher in the sky than it normally is when I'm out, so more UV light, more vitamin D, so it's all going to be great. I am going to slip a week. Theoretically, the original plan was to celebrate Marvin the Martian Day next Friday, not tomorrow, but next Friday. But losing this much time, I had already thought, you know, if I need extra time, maybe I can just go ahead and do Marvin the Martian on the last Friday in July, because Marvin the Martian debuted on July 24th, 1948, which, you know, it's July, it's close enough. There's not actually a Marvin the Martian Day. I'm just celebrating Marvin the Martian. So I thought, it would be fine. So I had already built myself another week into the schedule, which I'm glad because I did need it because of everything that was going on with the helmet. But if I can get the helmet squared away this weekend, then I can spend next week building all the other parts, you know, the gun and the little skirt. I forget what those are called. They're not called skirts. They're what Roman soldiers wore. I got to come up with the right name for that, because that's easy. And then shoes. And then that's pretty much it. And then painting, you know, whatever I need to paint, I can paint that last week and be done with it. And then we'll be good. So we'll see. At this point, I'm just going on step at a time. And there's always a fallback position, so it's fine, you know, but I'll give it a run. So people seem to, the people who know Marvin the Martian, they're excited about it. And so I was talking to a friend about it today, and we were talking about the voice, and he was doing the voice, and I was doing the voice, and we were on that, you're making me very angry, you know, that type thing. And he said, yeah, because that's what was so funny about it, because he's just like this little, tiny little thing, and he's talking about getting angry, and I said, yeah, I said, there's going to be a little bit difference there with me, because I'm 6 feet tall. So, but, you know, we'll make it work. We'll make it work, especially if I can make all the stuff work. So the big hope today is that I can get the helmet working mostly today. If I can just get it to where it's mounted and I can rotate the internal ball and it's stable, and I would love to make it to where I can take the helmet off and put the helmet back on. And I might do that with magnets. We'll see. I would love that. And the reason I would love that is so that I could kind of take it off and show people the innards, you know, because that would be fun. But I think at this point, what I'm going to try to do is get the frame that I built and bolt it down. I was going to try to attach that with magnets, but I think because of what it is, it needs to be solid. So if I can get the frame fixed up and bolt it onto the backpack so that I know it's not going to move, then possibly I can take that frame and put magnets on the frame and then put magnets on the foam that I used to build the helmet, and just that way the helmet will expand a little bit. I can just put it on. So we'll see. Step at a time. step at a time. It's a gorgeous day today. It's warm, sun is out, birds are chirping. It is a gorgeous day today. You know, it's been an interesting multiple months, and it's been an interesting multiple years. And it does seem like everything that can be shaken will be shaken. And I was talking to my buddy this morning at breakfast, and we were just talking about all the things going on in the world. And the notes that I had for the podcast had to do with a statistician whom I listened to. And what he said was not surprising to me. In fact, what he said is very much expected. I'm down to the little bridge. I just love this. Beautiful clear water running. So, what he said was very much expected, but we as humans tend to be swept along in moments, and we tend to listen to our flesh as it reacts, and then that fear and rage and anxiety and concern, it all just clogs up within us and makes it so that we can't think. He was specifically talking about the BLM riots, the George Floyd incident, the Michael Brown incident before that, and what he was referred to as a racial reckoning. And he had been studying all the statistics around it, and as I said, what he said was absolutely not surprising to me. The first thing that we all should have asked ourselves with the George Floyd stuff was, okay, we've seen 8 minutes of this. What came before it? I mean, we know what came after it, but what came before that 8 minutes? What were the circumstances? And in the conceit of believing that we, as human beings, from dozens to hundreds to thousands of miles away, could see 8 minutes and immediately determine what was true from those 8 minutes, that's arrogance. But of course, we are that arrogant as human beings. And then the next thing that happens, is that you have people who then seek to capitalize on that arrogance, and they establish parallels between the stories that they have been telling for decades. And if it's close enough fit, that story then takes control of the narrative. And so you end up with, we have to stop the police brutality in this country of white police killing unarmed black men. And it's always interesting when you talk to people about this and you get their opinion about, so how many times have white police killed unarmed black men last year? And you run the stats and you find out that there's actually more white men that get killed. And you find it's down, I can't remember the exact figure, but it's well under 50 in the millions of encounters that there are every year between police and the populace. You know, you end up, I think the last I heard it was maybe 25, maybe 12. I can't remember. But it's an absurdly low number. But the narrative took hold. So the first thing that we should have all been aware of is that this 8 minutes wasn't telling us everything. And the second thing that we should have been aware of is that if we have people coming forward and trying to convince us that that 8 minutes tells us everything, and especially if they have their hand out looking for money, we should realize that that money ain't gonna go nowhere but in their pocket. And so then, of course, we had the revelations many years later that BLM had declared bankruptcy. They'd raised like, whatever, $80 million and didn't really go to help any black causes, didn't help the neighborhood where George Floyd lived. You know, that money all just disappeared. So none of that was a surprise. But the thing that really shouldn't be a surprise is, so let's just say that the people who are running BLM just absconded with all the money. Let's just say that there was more to the George Floyd story than just an innocent black man being pulled off to the side and put on the ground and someone put a knee on his neck and suffocated him. Because there's a lot more to the story than that. But let's just say, well, but if it raises awareness, at least, and it improves police relations with the black community in America, isn't it worth it all? Well, the question then becomes, did it improve black relations with the police community, or did it even do anything recognizable for the black community, for the African Americans who live in the United States? And according to the statistician, yes, it is verifiable and documentable and graphable that it did do something. Because as is the case in all of my watches talking to me now, in all these cases where there have been race riots, where there have been protests, nationwide protests on issues, in all of these cases, there is an effect. It's just not the effect that we want. And what this statistician was pointing out was that according to his numbers, and he had all the graphs and charts, he's estimating that 10 to 15,000 more African Americans died after the racial reckoning than would have died without it. And he was showing the moderator of the podcast, he was showing them the graphs, and I was just listening to it, so I didn't see, but he said, you know, George Floyd dies here, there's an immediate escalation in the number of deaths. And it's primarily from two sources. One is murder by other African Americans, and the other is vehicle deaths, people crashing into things and dying. And he said, this isn't hard to understand. When the police are getting excoriated and they're trying to defund the police and they're getting reprimanded, police stop enforcing. Which is kind of the whole point, you know, we'd be much better off if the police weren't harassing us so much. That was kind of the whole point of all the protests, that these things happen because the police unfairly single us out. Well, he said, what you had is a lot more people out joyriding that weren't getting pulled over, and they were dying in car accidents. In addition, you have a spike in black-on-black crime, including murders, because the perpetrators think, well, you know, the police aren't there, so it's free for all. So if gang members have been harboring a certain resentment toward another gang member, then, you know, killing sprees start. And he said only now is it starting to taper off. So you end up with a story that is not true, raising money not for the cause they claim that they are raising money for. And the result is that more African Americans have died. That seems fairly upside down. I was just listening as well to another podcast on a reporter. The statistician's name was Steve Saylor, I think. This reporter's name, he went by Tommy Robinson, I think. And he was reporting on a story in a town in England where he's been reporting on other issues like this. This is not an isolated incident where a young Muslim boy, there was a little clip of a young Muslim boy being held down by a young white boy, you know, and these are teenagers, and the white boy's pouring a bottle of water on the Muslim boy's face. And this was labeled waterboarding. And of course, there was this huge blow up about it. A lot of people, and you know, shaking their fists and death threats against the family, all that kind of stuff. And the city council, I believe, actually paid off the headmaster at the school and all the teachers and signed them to non-disclosure agreements because they didn't want the truth about the Muslim boy coming out. And the truth was he was stabbing other kids. He was threatening to rape other kids. Parents would talk about it, you know, teachers would talk about it off the record. But everything is just pointed from one direction. And you get this one viewpoint that this young Muslim is just being oppressed. And of course, everybody gets all upset about that. And of course, sends money and commits all this stuff and all this energy behind this boy when he was, this Muslim boy, when he was constantly getting in trouble at school for violent acts, not just for saying the wrong thing, for violent acts, threatening the girls, getting into fights with the boys, stabbing people, you know, it's, none of that is brought out. Okay, that, I don't know if you heard that big heavy thing moving through the woods. That was a deer. We have for some reason, now the dog is barking. We have for some reason had a mama and a baby deer plus a third deer. They have developed an affinity for our houses here. And we saw them first of all at night, wandering around with our cameras. And now we're starting to see them during the day. We're just random times during the day. They're walking up and down our driveway, looking around for stuff. I don't know what they're looking for. So off to the side of the house, one of those deers was just off to the side of the house. But anyway, so this whole story that this reporter is telling seems very upside down as well. And of course, we're in a very, very interesting time right now with the politics. And I'll just drop my latest observations on that. Not that I'm a prophet, not that I'm making a prophecy, not that any of this stuff is the way I believe it to be, or the way that it will be. But this is getting really interesting. So, you know, Biden has this disastrous debate. And all these Democrats start calling for him to step aside. You've got to step aside. You've got to let someone else take it because we're going to lose to Trump and blah, 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 blah. And I think I said last week that Biden is not going to step down. It's not going to happen. He has too big of an ego. He believes he's the only one who can beat Trump. And he's got the nomination, and he is not going to let go of power. It's not going to happen. I mean, just by looking at his history, this is a man who is an egotist, he's a narcissist, and he's a pathological liar, which means he's probably got some measure of psychopathy as well. And I know when I say that, some listeners, if they're of a particular ilk, will then start attacking Trump. Well, Trump is, okay, but I'm not saying anything about Trump. I mean, there's certainly no lack of ego there either. But I know Biden from watching him and listening and seeing the things that he has done. So I was saying, you know, right after, that he is not going to step down. There's just no way he's not going to step down. And then who came out and agreed with my position? Was it RFK? No. Maybe it was Donald Trump that said, look, he's not going to step down. He's got too big of an ego. So now you have a very, very interesting situation. Because now everyone's calling him, all kind of the big top line people in the Democratic Party that were part of the elite are calling on him to step down. But that puts them in the role of the oppressor. We have to remember that the Democrats in Pennsylvania elected a man who had had a stroke, John Fetterman. The man had a stroke. He was at significantly diminished mental capacity. And they still voted for him. And anybody who brought that up then was accused of being an ableist. You know, you're minimizing people who have handicaps. You know, I mean, and we don't call it handicaps anymore, you know. Mentally challenged. I mean, the whole thing was, we defend the oppressed. Okay. Well, now that Biden says he's not going to step down, the more people call for him to step down, the more he becomes the oppressed, and the more they become the oppressor. And according to the logic and the calculus, at present, the oppressor is always wrong, and the oppressed is always right. So now what we're going to see is, I'm sure we're going to see people who are calling for Biden to resign, you're going to see them being called ageists and ableists and all kinds of names, because Biden will be the one who is oppressed. And so nobody is actually going to shove him out as long as he refuses to step down. And I don't know that there is any way to shove him out unless they declare him mentally unfit. But if they declare him mentally unfit, then he raises the question of, if he's mentally unfit to run for president, isn't he mentally unfit to be president? And if he is, and they invoke the 25th Amendment, now we have Kamala. And there's already some people that are trying to kind of rumble that direction, that Kamala Harris needs to be the candidate. And what's really interesting there is she was put in that position because she was a black woman. And so now to replace her with anything else besides a woman of color is going to cause all sorts of problems. So this is really fascinating. And as I did last week, I returned to the hypothesis that if this all springs from the same root, that root being Cain and Abel, and if everything we see through communism, through critical theory, through the gender stuff, through the identity stuff, if all of that stuff is directly related to the us versus them, oppressor versus oppressed narrative, then anything that has been done in defense of that narrative is open and available. And when you look at what the communist countries have done, Russia, China, and most horrifically, North Korea, there really is no temper, there is no restraint on how corrupt human behavior can get and how malicious it can get towards other humans. I mean, the stuff that is going on in North Korea is just horrible atrocities. So then the issue becomes, well, if Joe Biden can't be declared mentally unfit because of the ramifications of that, what's the other option? And as I said last week, as far as I'm concerned, the other option is that he suffers a heart attack or a stroke. You know, someone slips an injection in, someone gives him a pill. It's not that hard to do to make it look like he had a heart attack. And then he can be celebrated as the man who gave his all for his party. And he may have stumbled a bit there at the end, but he knew he had for the country, he had to defeat Donald Trump. And so Donald Trump is the one who's directly responsible for Joe Biden's death. And if he hadn't been so horrible to him in the debate, if he had just understood a little bit that not everybody can be good every night, and if Donald Trump had just had some grace and not caused him to have such a difficult time, that we'd still have Joe Biden with us today. That debate was the beginning of all the pressures that everybody brought. And here's what I expect. I expect we will get through the convention. Because you have to get through the convention. You have to have Joe Biden confirmed as the nominee. And then after, you either declare him incompetent or he dies. Wink, wink. And if he dies, then the convention can get together and they can appoint their superdelegates and they can vote in anybody they want to. That's how this works. So that's my wife heading out to a doctor's appointment. So it's all very interesting. It's just going to be very, very interesting to see how all of this works out. But my expectation at this point is that everyone's going to keep watching the numbers to see what happens between now and the convention. Then they're going to have the convention. They're going to celebrate Joe Biden as a great American. And they're going to appoint him as the nominee, because I don't know that they can do anything else but that. And then after that, there's going to be some incident, you know, where, yeah, not that I'm predicting this, not that I'm wanting it to happen, but if I was writing a story and I had evil villains in the story, this is what I would have them do. I mean, I would have them setting the stage and having important people say, we have to replace him, we have to replace him. And then he would just conveniently die. So we will see how this goes. It's a fascinating time. Oh, and so one other thing I wanted to say in all that is something that my friend and I ended up with. And that is, everything is shaking right now. Everything is shaking. But what's really interesting is that in the midst of this shaking, for those who can hear his voice, for those who can hear God's voice, God is still speaking. And we're still doing little things. We're doing our part. And we're sharing. And we're encouraging people. And we're praying for others. And we are being kind. And we are being merciful. And that's the important part. Because what's amazing to me about this is that God has always had a people. Some of them have died from the persecution. That's my friend noted that today. He kept saying, they died. I said, right, they died. But they did what God asked them to do while they were alive. And God has millions millions and millions around the world who are hearing his voice, who are doing what he's asking them to do. And he will accomplish his purpose using those millions. And so even though it looks like everything that can be shaken is being shaken, even if it looks like everything's upside down and everything's getting worse, the fact of the matter is God has his people at the right places, and God is going to fulfill his will in his time and in his place. And it's going to be great. This is Phil Farrand. And I have made it. Whoa, what just happened here? This got like really, really loud. Hope that wasn't that loud, for goodness. Sorry about that. This is Phil Farrand, and I have made it home.